It is my pleasure to bring back a favorite guest of mine. Her name is Christine Benz, and she is Morningstar's Director of Personal Finance, author of 30-Minute Money Solutions, a step-by-step guide to managing your finances, and the Morningstar Guide to Mutual Funds, 5-Star Strategies for Success. You all know Morningstar, and if you've been a listener to the show, you know Christine Benz as well. Welcome back to the show, Christine.
Steve, it's my great pleasure to be here.
So I want to talk about the IRA rules that people have to live by, and also withdrawal strategies from your IRAs. I mean, most of us have 401ks that as you retire, you roll into IRAs. Others have accumulated money in their IRAs and so on. So it's an important subject for us to tackle. So the topic really is about RMDs, which means required minimum distributions. And I want to think about those retirement minimum distributions as a way of creating a strategy for withdrawal rather than just pulling the money out. So give us your thoughts on that.
Right. I talk to so many retirees who are subject to required minimum distributions, which start at age 70 and a half. And the reason that retirees don't love them, especially affluent retirees, is that they can push them into a higher tax bracket.
Yeah.
Sometimes I'll talk to retirees who say, well, these withdrawals are really more than I care to take from my portfolio. So a couple of pieces of advice on this front. One is that I think you can be surgical about where you go for those required minimum distributions. So there's nothing saying that you have to give each of the holdings in your portfolio a haircut to raise your RMDs. Instead, I think it's a good strategy to periodically, once a year, as you get ready to take your RMDs, take a look at your portfolio in totality and see if you can't withdraw from those holdings that you'd want to adjust for a portfolio reason.
Yeah.
So a great example right now is that we've seen strong outperformance with so-called large cap growth stocks. So the well-known Apples and Googles and Netflixes, if you have them either directly or indirectly, maybe you have some mutual fund that's focused on them, your portfolio probably, if you've been letting things ride, has gotten heavy on that stuff. So if you need to withdraw your required minimum distributions, take them from the appreciated part of your portfolio that's potentially going to improve its risk-reward characteristics going forward.
Yeah, so like rebalance the portfolio. It's not that these large-cap growth stocks are bad, but they generally are more risky in many, many ways.
Right.
Growth rates, a lot of them are priced to project these spectacular growth rates, and if there's any blip whatsoever, they tend to get crushed. And maybe it's better as you get older anyway to start thinking about kind of more of the stalwart kinds of companies that pay higher dividends, have cleaner balance sheets, and diversified businesses as well. So it's kind of an easy way of thinking about getting more into, you mentioned growth stocks, getting more into value stocks and bringing that portion of the portfolio up.
That's right. Potentially value stocks. Also, and I know it's very hard to get enthused about bonds when you're looking at like 2% yield today. But I do think that for investors who have been hands-off with their portfolios, they may, in fact, want to add more to the safe side of the ledger.
Yeah.
That might mean some cash holdings. That might mean some high-quality bonds. Because while I don't think anyone can predict when there will be some sort of an equity market shock, I think it's reasonable, especially if you're well into your retirement, to lay the groundwork in case some sort of a market downdraft does occur.
Yeah, I think you always want to, especially when you're kind of on a fixed income or getting ready to be on one, you really want to take the road, you know, the more conservative road, maybe the road less traveled in this case. While everybody is hopping on the bandwagon for these really high growth, sexy stocks, you know, maybe it's time for you to step back and go, you know, that's not for me. Maybe if it was me, as a younger person, but maybe not so much. You know, there's another aspect here that I want to discuss. I've seen so many times where really the vast majority of people's savings were in IRAs.
Right.
So from 401k, that's the only place that they ever saved. So they end up with fairly large IRAs. And, you know, maybe their spending is like $60,000 a year, but they're forced to pull out $70,000 or $80,000 a year in these IRAs. And then as you get older, you know, that amount actually increases. So I've seen cases where people are pulling out $150,000 from their IRAs and they're living on $70,000 or $80,000. And that's a tax burden that would have been relatively unnecessary had they diversified their savings and had more taxable savings as well. Have you seen that too?
Absolutely. And that's going to be true for more and more of us as you know, people, baby boomers, get into retirement and they have most of their assets in tax-deferred accounts. Well, it felt good going in because you were in the tax break on those contributions, but money coming out is taxed at your ordinary income tax rate. And as you said, Steve, as you get into the required minimum distribution zone of your life, that could push you into a higher tax bracket. So yeah. For people who are still accumulating assets for retirement, that concept of tax diversification is so key. So that can mean amassing assets in taxable accounts, as you said, where you can earn capital gains treatment on your withdrawals, or if you have Roth accounts available to you. Even if you're in maybe a fairly high tax bracket at the time of the contribution, you really don't know what will happen in retirement, especially if you're someone who is accumulating a very large nest egg. You might be very grateful that you have paid taxes on some of your contributions in exchange for being able to take those tax-free withdrawals in retirement, which is what Roth accounts entitle you to do.
You know, there may be some good news on the horizon with regard to these required minimum distributions, because the last time they changed the life expectancy tables was in 2002. And so now there's a move afoot to update those life expectancy tables. So this is the tables that upon which the distributions are calculated. And because people are living longer, the amount of the distribution is expected to go down. And I do have an example here. For someone with $1 million IRA, the first year they're pulling out $36,500. That would go down to $34,400 under the new table. So it's not a lot of money, but it is some tax relief.
It is. And another thing to keep on people's radar is the fact that we have the SECURE Act, which is wending its way through Congress. Looks like it has fairly good bipartisan support, which I know is hard to imagine, but it does appear to have some support in Congress. And that would allow the required minimum distribution age to lift from 70 and a half, where it is currently, to age 72. So RMDs would commence at age 72.
Right.
So that's another thing that people can maybe take heart in if retirement is still in their future. Another point I would make on the RMD front, Steve, is that if people have that high-class problem of having higher RMDs than they actually need to spend, and you referenced a case like that, you can reinvest the money back into your portfolio. So you can't get it back into a traditional IRA, but you can at least get it into a taxable account, and there you can set up the account to be pretty tax efficient going forward.
Yeah,
so you can invest in exchange traded funds for the equity exposure, perhaps municipal bonds if you're in a high tax bracket for the fixed income exposure. So it's not a lost cause.
Right. Yeah, I wanted to talk about that. So talking about withdrawing this money, taking this money out, you know, you want to think about how you're deploying the assets. So as one thing you just mentioned was reinvesting them. And in the meantime, getting the big picture of your portfolio, what is your allocation to stocks and bonds, the different categories like large cap, mid and small, some foreign companies, and the kind of the typical generic overall asset allocation. But you can also fund your cash bucket for your living expenses for the next year.
Right. I'm a huge believer in this bucket strategy. The basic idea is that you are setting aside maybe 1 to 2 years worth of cash needs in retirement, and you're holding that in cash. So you're spending from that cash bucket on an ongoing basis. You've got to find a way to fill it up. Using your RMDs, I think, can be a nice way to refill that cash bucket.
If you deploy the money properly, the cash money, you can get 1.75% to 2% on some money markets now. So it's not as if it's earning nothing. Maybe it's keeping pace with inflation at the very least. So, you know, actually investing in a longer-term bond isn't really giving you all that much more right now.
That's right.
Yeah, keeping in cash.
Plus,
really
it can buy you some peace of mind, I think, to know that you have your near-term cash needs set aside.
Yeah.
Your long-term assets will do what they're going to do, and they may be volatile at various points of time. But you know that you have your living expenses set aside, I think that can provide a lot of comfort in retirement.
You know, I think when you're retired and you've got some money in cash, you know, there's some frustration when the market's rising, but when the market's going down, it really feels good. You really feel smart. You know, hey, I left some money in cash. And even if you're not really using it, at least you know that if the market really gets hit hard, there's some availability of liquidity for you to reinvest. You're not 100%.
Right. There's so much to be said for that kind of peace of mind.
Yeah.
I think the key point, though, is that you don't want to overdo it because there is an opportunity cost to having too much of your portfolio stuck in assets that have maybe a 2% return potential.
Absolutely.
In a good case scenario.
Yeah. Let's talk about some of the year-end strategies that people can use now. We're in November, December, and December 31st is really literally right around the corner. First of all, when taking money out of your IRA, one thing you can do is if you have enough money and you are charitably inclined is to make a gift to a charity from your IRA. Tell us about that.
Yeah, I love this strategy. This is called a qualified charitable distribution, and this is something that people who are subject to RMDs can take advantage of. So if you're pre-age 70 and a half, this isn't an option for you, but if you're post-age 70 and a half, you can take a look at this qualified charitable distribution or QCD. And the basic idea is that you take a portion of your RMD or your whole RMD up to $100,000 and you steer it directly to a qualified charity of your choice. And the beauty of the qualified charitable distribution is that that RMD amount that you sent directly to charity doesn't count towards your adjusted gross income. Mm-hmm. So it lowers your adjusted gross income, which can be pretty beneficial come tax time. And it's especially worthy of consideration because many fewer of us, due to the tax law changes that went into effect in 2018, are itemizing our deductions.
Yeah.
Instead, the standard deduction is higher for many households. The beauty of the QCD is that it's a way to be charitable, get a tax break, and not have to monkey around with deductions, which may not be saving you that much anyway. So it's definitely something to investigate. You don't need to send a whole $100,000 to charity. Even if you're a smaller giver, it's worth running the QCD through your RMD.
Yeah.
So check with a tax advisor on whether this makes sense for you. For many people who are charitably inclined, this is a great strategy.
Well, if you give $5,000 or $10,000, I mean, it's $1,200 in saved taxes or $2,300 or $2,500 in saved taxes. I mean, that's a considerable amount and every little bit helps and it all does add up. You know, talking about things adding up, it's time to start looking at your portfolio for tax loss sales as well. Not everything in a portfolio, especially a diversified portfolio, goes up at once. And as I say sometimes, if everything's going up at once, then your portfolio is not diversified. That's
true.
The definition, which means it's not all going to go down at once as well. So stuff's yinging and yanging all the time. So now it's time to look for tax loss sales.
That's right. And this might be especially fruitful for people who are individual equity investors. They may be able to find at least a few holdings here and there that are selling at prices below their purchase prices.
Yeah.
There may be a few oddball categories in your portfolio, maybe commodities, categories that really haven't enjoyed great gains recently.
Right.
So take a look. The virtue of looking for tax loss sale candidates in your taxable account is that you can use those losses to offset gains elsewhere in your portfolio, or if your losses exceed gains, which is unlikely except for maybe very unlucky investors today, you can use those losses to offset ordinary income. So it's worth checking out.
Maybe you've taken a flyer and you know you're just going to have to face it. You made a mistake, or maybe you're too early. Maybe you're right. Maybe you're
right.
Going to be right, but you're not right now. So you take your loss, wait 31 days, buy it back if you must, but that's something to consider. And finally, you know, this has been a problem in the mutual fund industry for years, and I think 2019, to quote you actually, is going to be another doozy of a year from a standpoint of mutual funds distributing their capital gains. We only have a minute left. Tell us about that.
Yeah, I think it is going to be another bad distribution season. Active mutual funds have continued to see redemptions. That forces managers to sell stuff. many of these holdings are appreciated, and that in turn can translate into a capital gains distribution that the fund pays out to you, the shareholder. So there's not a lot you can do about this, unfortunately, but take a look. If it's a holding that you wanted to lighten up on anyway, it may have been that you've already paid some of the taxes due. If a fund's been a serial capital gains distributor, selling it might not unleash a big taxable gain to you. So you may consider selling preemptively before the fund makes its actual distribution. Get some tax advice here before deciding what to do.
Yeah, and of course, and as always, consider these ETFs, which are very, very tax efficient, have been from the very beginning, and I've been talking about them really from the very beginning. So that can save you taxes and help you manage your taxes as well. Christine Benz is Morningstar's Director of Personal Finance and the author of 30-Minute Money Solutions, a step-by-step guide to managing your finances. Christine, thank you so much for joining me once again.
Steve, thank you so much. It's been great to be here.
And as you know, folks, my mission is always to educate my listeners. And I remind you week after week and segment after segment that we love to get your questions. So if you have any questions about your portfolio, your kids' money, your kids' kids, your retirement, your 401k, anything about taking better care of your family, give us a ring or email us. Go to stevepomerantz.com. Go to the contact section and let me know how we can help. Also, you can hear our podcast, too. Over 640,000 shows have been downloaded, so find it on any podcast app, or just say, Alexa, play the Steve Pomerantz Show. Now, how cool is that? Christine, thanks again.
Thank you, Steve.